Hey, Chad, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah.
How about...
No, not again.
Okay, what about...
I just saw that last week.
Okay, oh,
I got it.
Wait, you want me to watch what?
So, what'd you think of The Frighteners?
I'm glad I watched it when I did and how I did, because it lifted me out of a crappy mood.
Oh, good. Well, more on Chad's crappy mood later, but first, a word from us. Hi. Welcome to You Want Me to Watch What?, where Chad and I recommend movies to the other one that they haven't seen. And Chad and I have seen thousands of movies over the years, and sometimes one of them slips through the radar. So this week's selection, being spooky season, is the 1996 feature film The Frighteners, written and conceived and directed by Peter Jackson, who would later go on to make such indie films as The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. You know, very low budget kind of things. Anyway, we meet Frank Bannister, who is going around trying to help people contact their dearly departed loved ones. Turns out Frank can actually talk to the dead because he sees them. I don't remember if this is pre The Sixth Sense or post The Sixth Sense, but it's different in the seeing of dead people. So Frank makes a living by charging people to either communicate with their loved ones or having some of his ghost friends haunt a house that he goes in and ghost busts, air quotes, uh-huh. Because you can't use that in that movie. He's aided by Cyrus, a ghost from the 70s, and Stuart, a ghost from the 50s. Oh, and there's also the judge, an Old West gunslinger who is fallen apart.
Played by John Astin.
Yes, played by John Astin, Gomez himself.
That if it weren't for the credits, I would never have been able to tell you that.
I knew who John Astin was when I first saw this movie, but I had never connected those two until this viewing. I'm like, oh, wow. So, Frank is the local con man, at least some people seem to think he is. Well, people start dying as if their hearts have just been crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them happens to be the husband of the new doctor in town, whom Frank has exorcised their house recently because her husband is kind of a dick to Frank. So he sends the ghosts after him. Lucy believes Frank that he sees, you know, he deals with ghosts, and she meets up with him because she understands some stuff's going on and her husband died very suddenly and it's all weird. And they start to bond a little bit and she believes him. And it's about this time that Frank is seeing weird things. He's seeing numbers magically appear on people's foreheads. Not sure what that's about.
But it's not funny.
No, it's not funny. He's very clear about that. It's not funny. So while at dinner, he sees this Grim Reaper-esque character kill a person who has one of these numbers on his head. And he's... what the hell? So he's going chasing after it and loses track of it. And he and his ghost friends try to track it down, but, you know, they can't really pinpoint it until there's a big gala that he kind of crashes. Somebody dies. He gets arrested for the murder. Lucy helps break him out. Because she is now going to be the next victim. He sees a number on her head. So they break out. And putting him in a near-death scenario, like injecting him with something to slow his heart rate and putting him in a cryogenic freezer, he's able to spirit walk effectively to get to this Grim Reaper. Now, in the meantime, an FBI agent has showed up in town because the local PD are just kind of meh. They're, you know, typical small town kind of bumbling. At least the sheriff is.
Well, they don't have serious problems.
They don't. They don't.
You know, they've got traffic problems.
They've got traffic problems. Well, this FBI agent is, I believe the technical term is cuckoo bananas.
Yes. I believe I read that in a medical journal once.
Yes. He is very quirky. He doesn't like to be yelled at. He doesn't like confrontation. By women. Yes, he doesn't like to be yelled at by women. He is dead set on the fact that Frank is killing these people with telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
At one point when Frank is incarcerated, he's interrogating Frank, and Frank is just like beside himself with his head in his hands and whatever, and he's like, "You're doing it now. You're trying to kill me." "Well, you can't!" And he rips off his shirt, and he's got a lead, just steel chest plate on covering his heart.
"You can't do it."
So, while Frank's ghost is fighting this Grim Reaper-esque character, the FBI agent has taken Lucy and moved her to a nearby cemetery because he knows if she doesn't revive Frank by 9 o'clock, he's just going to die outright. And so he's going to keep her there till about 11. She fights the FBI agent in the cemetery, while Frank's ghost is fighting the Grim Reaper. She manages to get away. Frank discovers that the Grim Reaper character is actually the ghost of a serial killer from the 1960s named Johnny Bartlett.
More on this later.
So, Lucy gets back, revives Frank just as he's about to finish Bartlett off. And they try to figure out what to do next, because this is weird. Well, in the meantime, Lucy has been treating a woman named Patricia. And Patricia is at her mother's house. Patricia is in her 50s, 60s.
Middle-aged.
Middle-aged. Older than Frank and Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where the backstory kicks in. Johnny Bartlett went on a killing spree in the 1960s, 64 to be precise, in a hospital, killing 12 people. Carving numbers into their forehead for each one he killed. Now, Patricia was involved in this. She was exonerated under... She was younger than Johnny, and they took pity on the child, on the poor girl, claiming that she had been indoctrinated or whatever. So she kind of got off a little bit while Johnny was executed. Patricia's mother doesn't see it that way. She knows Patricia was very cognizant of everything going on, and she is with the devil, and the devil is with her, and very much hell and brimstone and, you know, whatever. Patricia tries to get a hold of Lucy to say, you know, help. She goes to the house. Lucy figures out that something is not right, and it starts to get attacked by the ghost of Johnny, who Patricia can see. Patricia is still talking to Johnny, even after he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Frank shows up, manages to get Lucy away. They find out that Patricia has Johnny's ashes. And perfect. We need to get this to safe, hallowed ground. And he will be gone from this earth. Well, the hospital that he had his killing spree in isn't that far down the road, and it's got a chapel in it.
It does.
Because so they make a beeline to this abandoned hospital with Patricia in tow. She's killed her mother. You know, the shenanigans are up. We're Johnny and Patricia are getting the gang back together. So we have this lovely scene in the hospital with Frank and Lucy trying to find the chapel with the ghost of Johnny Bartlett and Patricia and the FBI agent all trying to find them. The FBI agent gets a hold of Frank and the urn, scatters the ashes because oops, and then is immediately killed by Patricia.
Yeah.
Johnny, in his ghost form, is pinning down Lucy so Patricia can kill her. Frank attacks. Patricia strangles Frank to death, and then his ghost form shows up and pulls Patricia into the afterlife with Johnny.
She has an out-of-body experience.
She has an out-of-body experience. Frank's ghost pulls Patricia's ghost out, and they start going on to the great beyond, and Johnny follows suit. Johnny gets to Patricia, Frank lets go, and kind of makes his way up, and then Johnny and Patricia are sucked down into hell.
Which is the belly of a giant snake.
Which is the belly of a giant snake worm thing, yes. The reason Frank can see ghosts is because 6 years prior to all of this, he and his wife were involved in a car accident. They had been arguing. He'd lost control of the car, and she had flown out. Well, she didn't die. Patricia and Johnny killed her, and they had carved the number into her forehead because she was their next victim. Frank blocked all of that out and suddenly starts realizing things as the movie is going on. Frank is reunited with his dead wife. She says, it's not time for you to be here, and sends him back to Earth. The movie ends with Frank and Lucy starting to kind of build a life together. We find out that Lucy can now also see ghosts. And the credits roll as they play Don't Fear the Reaper.
A not great version of Don't Fear the Reaper.
A not great version, but done by a New Zealand band, and, you know.
Done by a New Zealand band, and all power to them that they were able to get such a thing, but they are no Blue Oyster Cult.
They are no Blue Oyster Cult, this is true. So, I mean, this is not a great movie, but it's a good movie, in my opinion. The CGI and the effects are absolutely dated by today's standards.
They're not.
Yes. Yes. There are certain scenes where you look at and go, that is clearly CGI. And yes. There are other scenes where you're like, that's pretty damn good.
So the scenes with the Reaper in like the full flowing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And where it like bulges out from the wall.
Yes. Whenever it takes possession of a thing.
Those parts are a little rough. Mm-hmm. And the demon worm, bit rough. The insides of the demon worm are okay, but yeah. The demon worm, but the different ghosts, spot on.
Oh yeah,
would not be out of place even in today's stuff.
No, it is a combination of late 90s CGI and practical effects. And you can tell that the CGI is still very much in its fledgling,
mm-hmm.
You know.
And important to realize that it's almost 30 years old.
Exactly, exactly. But the practical effects in this movie still hold up. When you look at John Astin as the judge, and there's no torso, it's just spine attached to legs. It looks really good.
So this is one of those... So, like, Jurassic Park came out in 93, and the reason it still looks so good for the most part is because they used models almost exclusively. But there are scenes where they did not, and those scenes still hold up. you can watch Jurassic Park 1 and still be awed by the dinosaurs. This is 3 years newer than that.
Yeah.
And so where the CGI was used well, it was used really well.
Yes.
So I was having just a crap week. You know, you ever just have a crap week?
Oh, yeah.
And I was having a crap week, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this while I'm having a crap week. And then we had to set the time to record, and it's like, okay, just I'll get it done. I'm going to watch. And damned if it's not a good movie.
It is.
It is. It's got some heavy moments, but for the most part, it's kept pretty light. Mostly on the strength of Michael J. Fox, quite honestly, who's playing a very down, like he is a dark, depressed individual in this.
Mm-hmm.
Haunted, quite literally.
Yeah.
And yet has also just kind of reached a point of, okay, this is my life now.
It's interesting to note that when they made this movie, he had already had his Parkinson's diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
He was still very functioning, but that probably played into that kind of mentality because he is, I mean, I would be too, you know, having just had this diagnosis a few years prior, you know, very down on everything, but okay, this is my life. I just got to deal with it. After this, he went on to do Spin City for a few years, and then he effectively retired from acting to focus on Parkinson's research and stuff like that. So this is probably the last major film role that he had had before the symptoms really ramped up. He's still working and has done stuff since then, but I think this is probably one of his last big theatrical releases, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, because that came, the early onset Parkinson's, that basically came to a head while he was doing Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
And like that was like 91.
Yeah, he started noticing symptoms then, and that's what prompted him to get checked out, and that's where they discovered all this.
And so a lot of the stuff that he did beyond that was either stuff that he was just doing a voice or a cameo or was being himself.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. It does play into how he played that role, I think. I think you're right on that. This is 5 years after the diagnosis, but before there was debilitating symptoms.
Yes, yes.
So
aside from having a crap week and this movie pulling you out of it, what are your thoughts on it?
So here we go. So, one, Michael J. Fox is a delight.
Yes.
And I don't think I've seen him in a bad, I've not seen him be bad in a movie.
There you go.
That opening is really intense because in the opening, you know, you've got Patricia is being haunted and it's real big and the mom has her gun and, you know, it's, and so that part being what it is. I like the ghosts. I liked the special effects there really worked out well. I thought that Lucy was a little bit too naive.
Yeah.
But the only way that it kind of fits when you realize that her significant other was a gaslighting, jerk. So when we learn about Starkweather, when we learn about the mass
Johnny.
Murderer, Johnny Bartlett.
Yeah.
He talks about, you know, got a score of 12. That puts me one above Starkweather.
Yeah. He's always trying to one up other
serial killers.
Yeah.
So because I was that kid in high school, I knew who Starkweather was. So Starkweather was a guy who killed, you know, 11 people in like 1964. Also had a young teenage girlfriend who happened to, you know, have to serve a sentence. They modeled Bartlett on this real life,
yeah,
you know, killer. And he is played masterfully by Jake Busey, who is Gary Busey's son.
Yep.
You'd also probably, well, okay, you won't because you didn't see Starship Troopers, but the once. But he also, like, he showed up in the Predators franchise and other type things.
Yeah, I've seen him in a few things.
Right. I like watching people who are good at their jobs do their jobs.
Yes.
And John Astin as the aging gunfighter for the two scenes that he's in, you know, he owns them and owns
Absolutely.
Them well. I thought that the joke of going ahead and having sex with the mummy in the museum was a step too far. But I think that's a Peter Jackson coming off of his Splatterhouse series.
Yeah.
And just, I did not need to hear John Astin say, I like it when they lay still.
On the upside, we didn't actually see it.
No, what we saw was a ghostly butt come up and out, in and out.
Out of a sarcophagus, yeah.
Sarcophagus. So, I do have a spot in this that was just so mind-bogglingly stupid. So ridiculous, even for the 90s, that it pulled me out of it completely, and I had to go back into the movie. A movie about a man who sees ghosts, who becomes a ghost. He Danny Phantoms.
Yeah, so that effectively.
A movie about that. The cops and the gunplay in the museum.
Yeah.
All right. So it's a museum. It's an ancient Egyptian, you know, set up and display going on. There are mummies. There are sarcophagi. There's stuff all over the place. Old stuff. And Frank is there to try to save the life of a newspaper editor who has a number on her head. She's mm-hmm. going to be next.
Yes.
And the cops show up and just start blasting. They're Danny DeVito. You know, they come in and you're just seeing things get bullet holes in them and blown apart. And I'm just looking at like, oh my God, these things are thousands of years. I mean, they're not really, because it's a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the context of the movie, it's like, that's a 3,000-year-old thing, of which there aren't any more of. And, you know, Johnny Law over there decides that he's going to blast this guy who is otherwise not armed.
No, he is. He doesn't have a weapon on him at all. He has ghosts, but they can't see the ghosts.
And so it just, that one was a hard one to take. That was a hard one to take. The next one was when they are running through the sanitarium at the end. And Patricia must have had a bra whose underwire was a bandolier for all of the shots that she put through that shotgun. I can only imagine how much that woman weighed at the beginning of the shoot with all of the extra lead that they had to have strapped to her in order for her to keep blasting as gleefully as she was for as long as she was.
Fun fact, Patricia played the mom in E.T.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She didn't have near as much gleeful gunplay in that one.
No. Maybe that would have made it better. I don't know. Mm. So this movie predates The Sixth Sense by about 4 years.
Okay.
3 or 4 years, something like that. Yeah, because it came out in 99. Okay. The Sixth Sense did, so.
All right.
So now we know where Shyamalan got the idea from.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
What a twist.
What a twist. So those were the parts that really drug me out.
And I can see that. Yeah.
And it's a large part of that is just because of I like going shooting and I like paying attention to those kind of things. It's just something I like doing.
Yeah. But as if you're not a gun enthusiast or just casually so, you're probably okay with those scenes.
You're probably well. I hope that you're still not okay with the museum scene because that's just out. It's a bad scene for the cops and the guns. There was a whole lot more comedy to mine in that. Out of Frank showing up saying, "You need to get out of here. A ghost is going to come kill you."
Yeah.
Because this is a woman who is very adversarial. She is antagonistic to Frank.
Oh, absolutely.
And so there was a whole lot of comedy in there that could have been mined instead of just having the cops show up and start blasting.
True. Overall, what do you give it?
Oh, see it. Absolutely see it. I mean, see it for Michael J. Fox. See it for John Astin. See it for Busey. You know, see it for Jake Busey, and you know, see it for D. Wallace Stone, who plays Patricia. You know, she does a really good job of that role.
Absolutely.
You know, heck, see it for Peter Dobson. That's the guy who played the Lucy's husband.
Mm-hmm. The jerk. You know, the gaslighting jerk.
The gaslighting jerk, who, by the way, was also Elvis in Forrest Gump.
So, okay, then.
But I mean,
I can see that.
But I mean, even his character as the gaslighting jerk is really good and believable and funny.
Yeah.
You know, it's... And Arlie Ermey, who we've completely skipped over.
Oh my God, yes.
Arlie Ermey, who's basically... redoing his role as Gunnery Sergeant Hartman from Full Metal Jacket.
He is Arlie Ermey.
Yeah. You know, but a lot of good character actors. Troy Evans as the sheriff. Mm-hmm. You know, that he's one of those guys that you're like, I've seen him before. Mm-hmm. Oh, right. He was in The Thing.
Yeah. You know, I don't know his name, but yeah, I know him.
You know, he was Roger Pedactor, the guy who was killed in Ace Ventura. That's why Roger Pedactor was murdered. It's good, and at least at the time that we're recording this, it's still on Tubi, which means it's free. So do yourself a favor during spooky season. Cue it up. It's not going to take a whole long time to watch. And it's funny.
It's a good Halloween movie that's not overly scary.
Yep.
So, see it from you. See it from me. You know, enjoy it. I believe it's your turn.
I'll come up with something. Gobble, all gobble. Right.
Hello, meet Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us, and let's talk about science fiction topics in books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.